Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... What is a rehab podcast? I'm doing this for Jenny, who's a medical professional, and hopefully she can listen to it a little bit if she wants to, and the other sort of associated professionals with it can listen and actually get an idea of what a rehabilitation podcast is. So what I'm going to do is give a bit of a history and a structure to it, and get on and doing it. And what typically happens is, like, this is on the Monday, the 20th of May, and so you'll know the sort of harrowing day I had in terms of cognitive load, absolutely wasted in the sleep, coming home in the train, sort of yawned through dinner, and there it happens. I've got to do so much exercise a day to lose weight and keep healthy and stuff like that, and by actually talking while I walk, I sort of can keep on going. So this walk, just to put you into it, you can hear a bit of traffic noise. Bloody, this is where I'm in Glenbrook in the Blue Mountains, and you can hear the noise of the freeway opposite. Just absolutely appalling hearing that noise going across here. This is very quiet noise. You'll probably hear the noise of a coal train going up. So I will walk, and the walk will probably take 90 minutes sort of through Glenbrook, along by the railway, down on the railway tracks, but on the road, but it's the railway, across International Park, down a gorge and up a gorge. Now, just to, and then all the way back again. So I'll be huffing and puffing, and I put this on the internet. There's possibly, you're lucky if you have 20 people download it directly from the website, and you may have upwards of another 20 or 30 people download it. And there's each day going in to look at the now 1,500 podcasts on different topics and different ways. You've got roughly 80 people checking up and 80 downloads amongst that. So it's a very small put. Watching that and seeing what people are interested in. I add a few things into the podcast, but the main aim is for cognitive rehabilitation. And I say that in the podcast. I'm doing this to get this aspect of cognitive rehabilitation. I'm trying to remember this or reconstruct that, and push it across. And the overall idea is that I found it much better for memory rebuild and communication to do an exercise while doing another cognitive exercise, mix it together, and it means that I sort of can exercise for longer, podcast for longer. So if I sit down and read an article, read a part of a book, so I'll read a whole book eventually onto podcasts, by 40 minutes I'm just wasted, whereas sometimes I can go a lot further in the podcast. And I suppose you go and look at various things. It's really good because you structure your thoughts before and during it, and then afterwards you can sort of appraise how you're going. And there's various things for it. So that's the overall structure. And well, I suppose I'll sort of two builds up. So the big objective is rehabilitation. I knew I had to podcast, but the valuable process is the actual podcasting, the actual thought and production of the podcast. So if I had to actually go back and sound edit everything and then put it up on the thing, I would spend 1 unit of time podcasting and 6 units of time actually mucking around getting it on the internet. So eventually, I realized that if I was going to rehab, I had to actually build a computer program which basically took my dictaphone information and slotted it onto the internet. Is that hard? Yes, it is. One is finding the correct technology. I think I started off, possibly with a mobile phone, which is really shitty to get off. Then MP3. Now, what would happen is, so what happens is that there's this 1,500 podcasts, and you can go back to any date and actually listen to how well I've gone. But in the early stages, I was only lasting 10 minutes, 15 minutes ago, producing these short files, and you can put the short files together in Audacity, but they're short files. I decided to link them, and you can link files in MS-DOS, the old computer system, just say file plus one, file, 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 file. But it turns out that audio files aren't like that. They have a wrapping around it. So it's sort of like trying to eat a cheese sandwich with the wrapper still on it. Just sort of, they're plastic slices. Doesn't go together. So what happened is I began producing these. It seemed fantastic. But then I had to hang on, work out how it unwraps it. And then these files can be quite massive. And for audio things, there's this 1,000 one ways to tweak it. And so I've forgotten what the name of the... There you go. I've actually forgotten the name of the software code. It's FMPEG or something like that. There's all these different software codes, third-party software codes, which are where you put in the name of the files and it goes away and it does it, runs a subroutine off it. And so essentially, because I'm a robotics programmer, basically got it to the computer's scanning its USB ports. If there's a audio file in the USB port, it picks it up, pulls it out. Oh, gee whiz. There you go. That's where my memory's gone. I've got to know. There's these code libraries that you have. So these code libraries sit there, and then if you do commands in that directory, and a DOS command in that directory, it will look up the executable in that directory, and so you have a new program language going in. But you have to send commands into a directory with it's there. So that's fairly simple. But it's actually quite a complex program in terms of putting it together. And then you put an image on it, a cover on it. And then what else do? I put a description, a link to another podcast. I then put a quiz, construct a quiz, including a word search on it. And that automatically gets produced. Now, of course, the reason for a quiz is that to write a quiz, you have to remember what you've written and remember the answers for it. And now I don't have to put the quiz anymore, because that was just absolutely exhausting. G'day. I'm just going past the station at the moment. Some walking here. This is the start where I'll pick up some... I've got this hill here. So there's all this type of technical stuff. So it seems quite simple, so now I have this system. I used to have this system. I think I went up to 33 Podomation updates where I said where I'm up to the getting it to do this, getting it to do that, getting it to get multiple piles together. Now, once the pot goes there, it emails It sends an email to Blogger and to WordPress, two things, and it publishes it on that. And then I've set up a feed burner. There's all these structure of different programs, and then that takes it and puts it on Twitter and iTunes. I don't know how it, you know, I must admit, I've forgotten how it does on iTunes. And this is the, I suppose it's be one way documentation. So the podcast is, I speak, I put it in the computer, and it's automatically broadcast. Now, I haven't really developed in iTunes and all that type of stuff. You need a cover and documentation to go with it, so the computer automatically generates it. And it's fairly simple. You say, how do I, from command line, this is DOS, send an email. And then in all these types of things, it has to do it across. And all it does is sends a fairly short email, and it points to a point on the internet. And so there's another group of programs which sit there just monitoring folders, and if something appears in the folder, it uploads it to the internet. Something because it's you really need a third part, so I'm just getting it to manage a whole series of third party things. And so that's the podcasting, and getting the software and the skills such that you can podcast and put it out. Now, and of course, I've had to take a fair while to, get that up and running. Picking up the right dictaphone bit across, and still not the best. So I do podcasts while driving, so if I drop someone, I have to drive all the way back. But so, and that's a real test, because I've got to watch the traffic and do other tasks while doing it. I keep it across. Now, that's still not perfect, because you get the driving noise, so there must be some way that there's a microphone which switches the driving noise and you cancel it. Now, of course, you can go in and subtract noise, and in fact, you can subtract noise on the, this is to make it broadcast quality. And it's taken a little while to get the microphone and everything up, and the batteries, and get it all fairly standard. So that's coming through. Now, to add to it, there's walking. And how does that all fit in? Now, this is something, so going back several years, you begin to, with the heart valve type of stuff, the blood goes back into the lungs, so it doesn't get, the oxygen blood doesn't get to your body, so you begin to suffocate. Now that sounds really bad, but it only starts off very gradually, and in order to get enough air, you have to walk. And so this is one of the things that a good fraction of some people just give up. Other people say, oh, I'm in problem, I feel a bit better if I walk. But it's not get up and walk, you have to really. So it was a bit of a shock having been fixed up, and I didn't have to breathe ahead of stairs or breathe ahead of a hill. So I had to train myself. I didn't do it consciously, and this walk used to take me 3 hours to do it, and going back up the slope, it would take me a quarter of an hour at the top of the slope, just heaving to get breath, and towards the end, I could just walk to the end of the block. Well, it's hard to say. I could walk to the end of the block in the first thing in the morning. First time, then later on in the day, it was all variable, and made people very sceptical. And the other aspect of it is that I had chest pains with it. Of course, there's a little artery which is going to clogging up and giving away only one. The others are turned out to be all okay. And so combination of chest pain and stuff like that. Of course, not breathing. You tended, when people were stressing you, you'd not breathing. You're going, I'm going mad. So I went to various psychologists saying, oh, blah, blah. They said, oh, you're all stressed. Well, thank you very much. But it was something else. Or when I said to a doctor, they said, here, you've got a herbal imbalance. I take my herbs. And, or another psychologist I went to, she was in head of a yoga studio. She said, take some yoga. Like this. And of course, you don't know, like, you're not sure until you cure it. And so it was just a real opening. And then, because when they slice you open and stuff like that, no one can walk properly. And you still, you have the operation, you can't breathe still, like that. And, but that's because your lungs, you've had your heart-lung machine for a while, and your lungs are full of phlegm. And they x-ray you, and you don't realize. So having the second operation, I knew how to clear my nose and how to cough things up. And coughing things up, when you split open, is really hard. They say, cough, oh, God, it's sort of tough. But you get up. Now, there's a little bit, but there's also some cognitive stuff in getting moving. And I started off just barely being able to get around the house once. Going around the house, the outside of the house, 50 times till I had a little goat track. Then I'd venture out. And I could only get up to certain slopes, so I could only travel to certain points around the place. And then I said, oh, I'm going to crack this. And absolutely freezing. I don't know how I did it, but I had a blanket on my head. And I went on Google Maps and said, oh, this is the maximum slope I can go. So, and there was this actually... a 15-kilometer walk. I don't think it is 15-kilometer walk. At a slow, steady slope, which I could just get. And going down, I would go down, and then coming up, I could only move 1 foot half the length of a foot in front of the other. And I didn't realize that at the time, but there would be always police around the place, okay? Just driving past, and hey, you okay, mate, and stuff like that. And I didn't realize they were keeping an eye on me, so I think that's rather sweet, you know, to do it. But also, I took a much longer time doing it, and I suppose they were doing other things at the same time. And so that took just buckets and buckets and buckets. And at that time, the valve wasn't in properly, and so, but I was so grateful I could actually breathe. And the first time I sneezed, it was a hooray. So with the dodgy valve, you can't sneeze. So you got that thing of walking anyway. And then, the horror is that when they're sort of looking at, you know, you've got a target weight to get down to, and you say, I'll do all this walking, nothing's working. And they say, oh, no, you've got to do exercise bike as well. So, yeah, I do, I just do this walking, I suppose, and you've got to walk sufficiently fast and sufficiently high to get energy, sort of energy output. And so I do either exercise bike or walking, but unfortunately on the exercise bike, it's no good podcasting. It just leads to absolute horror. So with the exercise, this dreadful formula, you have to expend so many greater number of joules of exercise and resting, resting expenditure greater than your food intake to actually slowly tick down your your weight, and basically you have to, I effectively only lose about 20 grams a day, 20 to 40 grams a day, unfortunately, but you know, that adds up. And the other thing to that is consistency. So you have to be, so unlike these binge diets and stuff like that, binge exercise is just a very consistent push, you know, only eating three meals a day when it is, and not trying to be good, and pushing there. So there's this paradox of consistency, and from that consistent base, add certain things into it to get across. So that's covered the podcasting and the walking. And I know that there's an audience which will listen so far to get a few stories about sort of, you know, what's this rehab overall thing happening? You're taking control, you're going ahead and doing it, and you're looking at objectives and how to go on it. And of course, so when the reset switch on, you don't have much resources, sort of mental planning resources. You can just say, A, B, or C, or do this, and there's sort of pre-programming in you. So, I suppose, there's sort of basic, and I'm not a military file and all that type of stuff, but I'm giving these stories out. They will often this is back in Army Reserve, sort of drop you at a location with so much food, and you've got to go so far and do so much in a certain time limit, and not everything goes well. You know, some people, you can lose some food, you just have to get on. So the idea of managing a crisis and keeping it together. And there's sort of been cases where you're left on your own. So this is not Army, but where a group of uni students were walking the Flinders Ranges. We had the food drop, it sort of ran out of water. And if you panicked or did it, you're stuck. So you just had to just conserve water and just move on. They're not very good things. I think if a bit of a description, possibly a better description. So you're by yourself, there's a big target, and you're your own enemy, and there's things working against you. And one of the people I want to talk about is Mawson, Douglas Mawson, an Australian Arctic hero, Mawson Base. So the idea, he was a geologist, and he went down little wooden ships. So Britain went to Antarctica, and Australia went to Antarctica. We now claim more than 2/3 of Antarctica, I suppose, and put under various treaties, and this is the heroic stuff. And so he left Hobart in little wooden ships, and went to what is now known as Mawson Base, scaled these, or went up this slope, and with, I think, 5-6 teams, broke it up in 6 teams, and they all went out in flower shape, petals. So go out, at a bearing, down, and back to explore the whole area. Huskies and dogs, and he led his own expedition with a Norwegian, a few other people, huskies and stuff like that. And their pedal was 3 times as far, you know, like 10 times as long in general, and they went very far. Now, we'll just talk about going up there first, because this probably gives you an idea, because there's all this, like, I've rehab focus, and there's a whole lot of education, politics, and, you know, distraction going on. So, as he was going up, he had the experienced explorers, sort of a few academics, the academic, basically students. So this is a story handed down from a co-explorer to their daughter, in actual fact, and the daughter told me about Mawson. So I can't... Is that true? Sure is. I can't believe it. I suppose it must be true. I must have been old. Okay, she must have been, she was 10 years older than me. That can, could go back. But what happened is that this person said, look, I've got a degree. I'm not going to peel potatoes. This is the Southern Ocean. Yeah, it's a pretty wavy Southern Ocean out there. Winds, cold. It's not a tropical thing. It's pretty awful. And he's in his cabin. And those days, they packed with enough. And they said, you've got 3 weeks. And in your 3 weeks, you planned as you went along. You didn't pre-plan everything in Hobart. So he's planning and stuff like that. So he's doing lots of stuff. And he said, this is Mawson. Listen to this person. He said, yes, very interesting. Oh, look, I've just got to step out for a moment. And he left, and the student was there 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour. And that's where he said, where is he? Where's the, we can't find him with the captain. And he finally found the Mawson in the kitchen with the staff peeling potatoes. And person said, look, I've learnt my lesson, and he just peeled potatoes, and they got the mission focus, and didn't go. Now the others, well, so Mawson went out on this thing, and went over a snow bridge which fell, and the first group of huskies went over, the second group of huskies, and the main group of huskies with the huge, you know, all the food on one, so the food would be a central, you'd see the interesting stuff, so they'd have the light ones go out, and this went down, and they said that the person who fell down with this sled didn't die or something like that, or there's some aspect to it. I have to remember it, because I've heard it from people, relatives of the people. There you go. And so it's in the freezing cold, and they've only got the day's supply for the scout sleds, and a limited number of huskies left. And so they set back, and one by one they die, and eventually the Norwegian, who's a vegetarian, so I don't know how that quite works out, eventually perishes. And now they go through this thing where they're starving, but their dogs are at the front, and they have to work out what they do. And so if the husky doesn't work, is not good enough, of the weakest husky always dies, but they always go a bit more slow. And essentially they would take the dog, this is an awful thing, they take the dog around the corner, and there'd be this, poof, and at the end, and they would eat. And of course the energy storage in the husky is the liver, that's where all the energy is, and the liver is full of vitamin A. Of course they began to get vitamin A poisoning from eating too many husky livers. And to this day, in Australian scientific labs, there's this thing of we've got to shoot a husky. You know, I won't go into the full story, but there's highly emotional stuff that we're going to have to cut this experiment to focus on some other one, or we have to sell this to get enough money to do that. We have to, it's called shoot a husky. But then Mawson single-handedly went to the base. Now, so you saw the cold and stuff like that, and there were these food stores and stuff like that. So he once he met the food store, he could just survive, but the skin was peeling off his feet. It was basically skin and bone, and he saw the ship on the horizon had left, and there was the Mawson base there. It wasn't called Mawson base at the time, and he went down, and what they did is that they decided, some people decided to winter, and so it was survive basically there. But being able to swap from your mission focus and realize that your mission is to get back to the base. And so that's my overall mission, is to rehab and get to the base. And I'm aware that something that you have to do yourself. You know, when things pull away, you just have to rely on your own logic. And if you came across, you'd be interested in talking with the other to get a better version of it, because it is so desperate. You're like, your own logic can easily kill you. It's not that dramatic, but say if I had a stupid rehab plan, it could set me back, but it probably has set me back months. But so this is why I'm really interested in getting the report in such a way, the report's back, in such a way that it doesn't demoralize me. I get like the reports, and I suppose this is also from Army intelligence. Oh, it sounds awful. Army intelligence, where you get a patrol report here or a weather report here, and it goes into the intelligence officers, and they get the pithy, you have to do this, and they can balance things. Whereas if you go off on your own observations and your own amateur intelligence stuff, it goes off across. So Mawson is definitely an inspiration, and a lot of research gets you to question your own thing and be able to work with other professionals. But it's definitely on your own. You sort of have to understand when you are rehabbing, when you are training. Now, one of the things I wanted to say is not responding quickly to everything my employer does. They do something, just look at it and go across. And there's sort of like two things I want to say there. I keep on go back to the Australians in North Africa at the start of World War II. They were sort of rather left alone, and they just trained, and then they trained from just being average to the elite people, and they were the first group to actually stop the German army. This is at Tobruk. So it was fallback Australians. Can you hold Tobruk for 6 days, 6 weeks, and it went for months until the Germans gave up, until the Australians left, and then they took Tobruk. They waited for the Australians to be called back to New Guinea, and but what happened is not just firing wantonly. When the Germans came in, they held their fire till they could. The tanks were in range. They took out the tanks, and then did the infantry. And often you've got to watch this is wait till, don't fire off until it's in range and it's effective and it's going to go somewhere and it's under control. And the opposite thing is, this is when the Japanese, World War II again, when the Japanese were coming down Malaya, what would happen is they said, oh, I want to find out how many, it's not really racist, the Indian troops there didn't want to be there, and they were, they sort of didn't had, they were just confused. So what would happen is that when the Japanese started to attack, everyone would fire, and they'd get the, they'd be able to map out where they are, because everyone would fire and go back. And this is again at the, or any weak, untrained force with lack of discipline, that they all fire at once, and you can actually, you know, listen to where the command, you know, is. You know, one fires off, and then you can actually track where things are. So this is true, that you're just sitting there and you suddenly get this email in this situation, and you can see, that group there must be informed, and you get the size and the of what's going on. The sort of thing I also want to say is, this is just in hopefully entertainment, for people interested, is again in World War II, is the sort of the thinking in conflict in terms of not necessarily going to war. So focusing on what you're on about. And I think of myself, or the actual situation, as off the coast of Australia is the Coral Sea, which is, you know, Fiji, Great Barrier Reef, you know, that section up towards New Guinea. So that New Guinea down. And so Vanuatu's on one side and Australia's on the other. It's the Coral Sea, and there's obviously coral reefs and stuff like that. And so there was Pearl Harbor, and carriers, US carriers, were out that day, and a whole lot of things. That the harbour was actually shallow, so when they sank a ship, that could be refloated, and all this type of stuff. It didn't really go the Japanese way, and Pearl Harbor, or many ways. But the US were able to muster a fleet out, and so this is the Japanese had slightly more aircraft carriers, and the US had so many aircraft carriers, and the aircraft carriers were all operating in this rather small sandbox. People, they were just trying to hunt each other, and the main thing is keeping radio silence, so that you can, and trying to pick things up. So this is why, you know, sort of, you get a bit of conflict, a bit of that. You don't write heaps and heaps of emails, contact heaps and heaps. You keep the radio silence. And I think with the sort of heart condition and stuff like that, I feel as though I've been, you know, knocked out and sort of leaking oil and then slowly getting the steam. But you've got to sort of keep out of radio silence. And so there's this thing of trying to locate where you are, and deliver a knockout blow. And I think what, and I've, so in my carrier fleet of, say, if you've got, oh, listen. Sorry, I'm just walking in the bush. There's something crawling along there. It's too cold, but it sounds like a snake. Does it listen? could have been some sort of big insect. Whatever it is, it's pretty weird at night. So I'm in Glenbrook Gorge going down it. And so you see, talking about it. And so there's all this theory of carrier warfare and basically different carriers have been blown up. Yeah, in this of this group, there's definitely an enemy and definitely a group which is blown up, and you get various thing, and you people. Oh, I might give another analogy for it. And the idea is to actually think beyond the theatre, because. World War II stretched a whole long way before anything really definitive happened. And it looked on paper the Japanese and Americans were the same, except the Americans had radio beacons which allowed their planes to find their aircraft carrier again. And so the Americans would go out. And so there was, they would send their aircraft out and certain things. And I'm obviously not going to try and sink any enemy aircraft carriers, but they were able to bring them back, and so that was a key piece of technology which ticked over. And of course the opposite thing happened, the Japanese running out of fuel, and they saw the aircraft carrier down and tried to land on them. There were US aircraft carriers, so stuff like that. What happened longer term, much longer term, is that the actual American anti-aircraft cannon. So like I'm a disabled aircraft carrier, just trying to keep radio silence and try not to get bombed and torpedoed. But the longer term thing throughout the war, the Americans with the British technology developed a little radar on the end of their shell. So when they fired their shell, it would blow up only if it was right near a Japanese aircraft. And so within 3 days, called the Marianas Turkey Shoot, the US blew the entire Japanese Air Force out of the sky. Just changed it. They said, come on. And every time a Japanese plane went near, they just blew it out. And now the sort of analogy, I mean, that sounds awful, but the analogy is that if you are going to do something, you've got to make sure that it's well researched, hits the target, and there's no manoeuvring. They can't just sort of say something else, I'll do this. You don't have enough resources for them to dodge and drag you in, and because your main job is rehab. And again, there's all this. People tend to think that people are against you. You've got to fight them. Or a lot of the time, if they're a distance away and not doing harm, but still sort of trying to do harm to you, it's okay. And so there was one of the islands on the far side of the Coral Sea is called Rahul. And it was occupied by Australians, and the Japanese took it over, and it was pretty awful what the Japanese did to the Australians. And so the Americans took it back, and they said, well, we're moving on. Australians can come back in. Watch it. There's some Japanese up in the hill there. And so we expect huge numbers of Australian troops and resources fighting these Japanese in the hill. And the Americans were going, what? They're in the hill. They're over there. You've got the guns. You can stop them coming towards you. Just... there's no point, and we had sort of got this conflict mentality, and there's that aspect. So there are all these little training things to go into the actual training what's going on, and I suppose. Another thing is the fact that there's people against you and this conflict is to like all of my other people, that they've taken it really seriously, which they should, of course, and the fact that it is aimed at you personally is there, and it's aimed to get you off the system. It's a behavioural thing, and they don't want you there. They want you out because they're running the show their way with their people, and they don't want anything questioning, and they've done a history, and it's a bit dodgy, but if the people are in their group and it's a bit dodgy, it's all there. That's pretty standard conflict situation where the reason enemy are attacking you is to make you, the victory comes obviously in annihilation, but it's a mental victory, and so you've got all these dreadful things happening, and then there's these attacks and things aren't going right, and the word, and one of the things you learn is that a lot of the words and phraseologies you pick up from a particular area with a particular group that you're with, and you then question, otherwise, no, that's not common, I've never heard that one before. So this is what they used to say, this is the... So there's a big difference between vets who've been in this situation, veterans who've been in this situation, who obviously are off training, they would say, that's another day in the office. You know, that's what this office is about. The job is that these people are going to try and disrupt you and do it, and you have to think through. There's no point if you just engage with... You're not here for a yippie shoot or a corral. It's not that type of stuff. You've got to secure a bridge to allow this to happen, the big strategic thing to happen. So you don't get sucked into it's a reality. You've got to be aware of it. You've got to have a tactic for it. You've got to make sure that you don't give, that it can't work out how to stuff you out as much as stuff you. You keep your target low, but it is just another day in the office. That's what it is, and your big target is. So my big long target, obviously, is, so the internal strategy is cognitive rehab and working way through it, and let's hope that all that effort pays off. I hope it does, but if it doesn't, I'll find out and we'll work on it. And there's sort of, as I said before, it's sort of a gradual improvement, and then strategies and confidence that you can do it, and just letting your head go across, and I don't know, different stages. But the external strategy is that at the end of the day, what the government is doing and what we are wanting to do as a country is educate Australians to be the most effective, happy, resourceful, truth-empowered people. That's what we want to get at the end. And if I can't achieve the rehab, and if I can't get that there, I'm just wasting my time coming back to clean up. I think the cleaning up the sort of strife and infighting, it's something I obviously can't do, not properly rehabbed, and I can't do. It's something which you might be in a position, but if you're not putting in the social infrastructure, the hospitals, the schools, the roadways, and just getting along with making it work, you're just going to be there pot-shotting people, and you're just never going to... There will always be another person coming up because the actual process behind it is there. So that's a view. And now obviously there has to be some sort of strategic. I'm now going up the gorge. Oh, and I think I'm doing better doing it, and I must admit, I'm extraordinarily tired. I wasn't as tired as previous times. Like the first time I just got on the train and fell fast asleep, but I'm still really pleased to get to bed. Oh, to bed tonight, and it's nice full moon. There's a lot of snow, there's not a lot of smoke around the place. What's the idea? Obviously there is this hidden code of conduct. Not the code of conduct, but so back in the day there was the pirate creed, and there's a whole series of cultural things, the black dot. They had certain things that all pirates, they went to bed early, they all ate in a particular way, they had things that you're allowed to kill people in certain ways. I don't know, they had the plank. Obviously the plank is somewhere to go, and the plank and crucifixion and stuff like that, it's where someone is put in danger and someone is being punished, but collectively no one can do anything about it. They are forced to hold their hands, or they'll go on the plank as well. And I suppose it's a form of terrorism. Yeah, it's a behavior modification. And of course terrorism unfortunately never ends, because once you've done some terrorism, you have to do it again. You have to, you're committed across it. And so you've got this pirate's creed. Now, if someone is not operating with the pirate's creed, sort of saying, oh, here's this one management system, here's this, yeah, why don't we actually solve and go across? You're obviously going to be wind up on the plank. So the thing is, obviously, if there's the pirate culture going on, you just hang loose, move away from it. But it's very important in this, the bullying aspect, that there's no point bullying you in private. You have to be bullied such that you scream for help, and then you don't get any help, and that cements the group. So you're all that. A series of stuff, just to recap, the podcast engine to improve it, the walking overlay to allow me to do things, two things at the same time, the general focus away from conflict onto rehabilitation. Now, you have to be up front, you have to lay all cards on the table, not all the cards, but to say, look, I'm doing rehabilitation, and otherwise it just doesn't make sense. What the heck is, you know, how did these podcasts come together? So a lot of them, I will say, oh, I'm at this stage of doing it. And then the idea that you do have a strategic objective, but you're not going to expend energy until you've done all the homework, is what's this here. Now, previously, so obviously I'm cognitively getting there, bits and pieces are clicking together. Now, one of the things is that there's the sort of wake up call. You are on your own. but we're going to help you here. We're going to give you a bit of rehab informed by neuro tests and stuff like that. We'll give you precision rehab and we'll see where that goes. And obviously, I've got the idea of throwing myself into it and seeing where it goes. And I don't, believe it's going to be an easy push. I don't know where things go. I don't know what rate I'm going at. And the more I do it, I realize that I get up to something and it forks up with these complicated. I can improve it here and over there. But I try here, pull away, and I come back and improve. Or I don't know what's holding up, but there. Essentially, you're on your own, and you know, these guys aren't, they're not your friend, basically. These people are not your friends. Be polite, that's okay. Be polite. Yeah. What are you going to do with them? I recommend you be polite. And I definitely... it's quite a big hill that I'm coming up here. Be polite and go ahead. And we recommend, so there's internal, external, strategic things. The strategic thing is, what is the strategic things that you could do which will reach your rehab objective? And if you do achieve it, we'll give you the information to work out the long strategy. So there's that. Then the fact that key thing that you haven't got down pat in is communication. Let's call that a problem. So people with the scan and the psychology degrees and all that sort of stuff, yeah, they can tell what's going on. People who don't have the scans, don't have the psychology degrees, they are struggling. And it's a mutual thing. You're sort of stuck with your projects, but you can't move, and you have to re-engineer. Especially when you write something out, and you read it back, and it's absolute tangled garbage. So it's communication. Then there's skills, sort of like talking for a while, stringing things together, but it could be handwriting, short-term memory, long-term memory, that type of stuff. But there's also the skills, say, in electronics, skills in programming, and you're on your own, right? You are on your own. There's no one to turn to. You are Mawson, and you've just shot your last husky, and yeah, you're on your own. You have to do it. And of course, there's the health thing, and you've got to take a while to actually listen to what the health things are. So you've got the warfarin type of stuff to go on. Check the blood pressure down. Check that's under control. You know, just thus tick them off one by one. And then the weight. And that's taken a bit of a thing to actually work out. How does that fit in? What do I do? And that's all zoned down into accurate weight measurement at a time of day and discipline. And motivation. And then I'm going off to somehow a strength trainer who's says she's going to build my endurance, and so I have to do exactly what she says with the monitor and the app and get my heart into certain rings and times. And what happens, I don't know what it is, I think I've got less endurance now that I've started doing that, but Now I'm going to hang on there, listen to what it is, and go ahead. Now, obviously, if you've got less weight, it's there. And of course, what I think's going in that, just pushing and pushing, eyesight, hearing's changing and all that type of stuff. I don't know. So, but you've got those four nodes, and they're not independent. They're one, each gives structure or support for the other. So the projects go across and they will eventually open doors, or at least to the exploration. Do I have enough to be consulting? Do I, from this project, understand the strategic weakness? I'm going to go up to this white tree up here. I'm sure I've passed. There's a 20 sign that's coming up here. We should come across, and then I'll turn back. So, sorry, this is going across. And, yeah, my hearing's not as good as it is, because normally I'd be able to hear my foot fall a bit. I've got this I suppose it must be tinnitus, something. I don't know, that sounds, tinnitus is in your foot, is it? Tinea is in your foot. To go across. So, there's projects, and how they go across, and then the communication, and here's the white tree. Whew. Turn around. It's white with this full moon, and there's, I think, Jupiter is up near it. Get this, look, there is Jupiter, a very bright planet next to the full moon, and it won't be there next night. It'll be at a different point, but at the moment Jupiter's right near the moon. Okay, getting back onto it. So let's look in depth at some of the projects. So there's a major communication problem trying to fit quantum mechanics, which is right, with the folk knowledge, which is incorrect. So there's folk knowledge which has been taught in schools. It's hundreds of years, even medieval concepts in it. And it's taken a while for me to, you know, as I've built this project, to look back at the folk knowledge. And the folk knowledge, this is a belief. I don't know, the folk belief might be just to give you an idea that everyone would identify as folk knowledge immediately would be vaccinations and autism. Now, one would say, well, a bit of data, it's okay. Folk knowledge is, it's got a folk society structure around it. So this knowledge about how the atoms taught and how they teach and everything is maintained by people getting very emotional if they're told that what they were taught and what they are teaching is incorrect. They will not respond by going, oh, what is correct? No, they won't do it. So this thing is to actually produce something which only cannot be explained by their group of explanation, can only be explained by a new group of explanations. And so the laws of quantum physics operate within this ceramic, and the ceramic begins to oscillate. And that was shown today. And built in there is a whole sequence of skills improvement. So there's sort of the skills to know from how to go to the concept prototype, where you got the concept, the blocks there, and you replace the blocks with functional components. and then improve the functional components and think about the functional components and replace them. So the switch, I had a switch sort of a little bit similar to Einstein's original switch. So this is something attempted by Einstein and didn't fail, didn't get through. And then I replaced it. I had to look at the circuitry, try to build the circuitry, 1970s circuitry. Slightly more advanced, and using a bit of robot circuitry to start to get things to slowly pick up and modernize it. Go along here. Sorry about this. Eventually get better and better circuitry, and as you build it, sort of having industry experience that while you've got it in the lab, you run it at 110%, you have it on for hours at a time, you are trying to make it to fail, to see the fail point, to understand how it fails. And so that's exactly what happened with this. I had a fantastic, upgraded the power supply, upgraded everything, and it fused and burnt in. So this fantastic quantum pendula, you've caught it at this point in time. Now, the overall structure is that it goes as fast as it can go. So when I first looked at it, I asked Sydney University for help, saying, but got nothing. So at least I learnt from there that they're not interested. And then as I built it, I was sceptical of it and actually was able to solve one problem by the other. But initially I thought I would have to build a magnetic field detector and a magnetic field nuller. And so from your concept prototype, you build your research prototype. From the research prototype, you can spin it and change the magnetic field since the previous in there. And then your research prototype, you take in and out components, shrink it down, so you sort of migrate it towards a production prototype, and then when it's in production, pre-production, you start bashing it. So there's no point, you've got to work out how this goes. So there's no point bashing it right away because it's just a concept prototype. You just want to get it up, barely working, and see the weak points to where it goes. Once it's together very stable, you have to then bash it. So you've got to work out when to bash it. And then when it's there, identify the problems and move across. So that's one standalone project. And that's sort of pulled out sort of base skills. Now, those base skills, learning about how, modern 2005 era type of stuff that works together. The next step is 2012. It's when the various things come out to Australia. So in the US we're about 5 years behind, and how looking at that technology, how you migrate it to the next project. So that's a project of a Rosetta Stone for quantum mechanics, which you, when it comes into schools, when it's shown, this will transform teaching. And it sort of rather steps around the place between, did I fire six or did I four? But did I fire five or did I fire six shots? Do I feel lucky, punk? But there's that rather conflict, and do they want to change it's something has changed. You need that catalyst of change. So if I can sort of go back into the crisis, like I think Australia had a huge crisis in what? I don't know. I think 92 we had a recession we had to have, and the recession we had to have was because banks were over-leveraged and blah, blah, blah. But everything was okay until one person did a PowerPoint, did an overhead projection, and everyone saw it. They went out of the room, and that started the crash, and eventually restructure. So there's got to be an item which will do it. It's words will not work. They haven't worked in the past. For God's sake, I mean, people are using quantum mechanics. Countries are teaching it. Australia isn't doing it. We need this catalyst. This might do it. At least that's the concept of the catalyst there. Then there's the another project, which is the 5G Internet of Things beacon. And I've been able to slowly click on that step by step. It's sort of like going on step by step by buying the different chips and sort of realizing, I suppose, that the take-home message there is the days of actually having to measure the capacitance and resistance to pick a sensor and then translate it are gone. That's already done in a little thing of a 5-cent coin where the sensor is plugged into that. And then that's that little micro, that board called a breakout board is powered, and then that does all the A to D for you and puts it through. Then when it's a digital signal, it can then travel wherever it wants to easily. Okay. Now again, this is what's available, but when you actually get what's available, you know to ask, and these things are built on the concept that you would only want one sensor for one Wi-Fi. So there's no idea of having a local bus with all the sensors on that bus. That's just not there. And it's just simply not there. And so what it means is that at a certain time you want those to eventually track down those chips. The chips aren't there, or they're very expensive for some reason. So this is, and you've got an explanation why do these little chips don't have a way of setting their address, and the answer is that they don't have any, but you have to build it across. So you've got a beaker, and that beaker now can report its mass, temperature, pH all at once, and continuously and effortlessly, i.e. that the data goes into, I said that's the web page there, and the web page goes to an antenna and connects to the world. And that has to happen. And that's just the opening gambit of a whole series of Internet of Things to embed inside the classroom. Now, like the first one is, now all this effort is taking time in communication, in skills, and not in health really, unfortunately. I suppose speaking about going across there, and it may not work yet. The idea is the project's there as a scaffold for health, and so it means for the skills to come together, the strategic thing, but to have something to communicate about and to have something concrete that when you show someone and they look away from it, or they say, that's been done before, and obviously it hasn't, you realise that you're up against a cultural barrier, not a not a communication barrier. And so there's a whole suite of Internet of Things things that you can just slowly engineer, and that will transform the I don't think we really fully understand the Internet of Things, and I also don't think it is sustainable. My honest opinion. The G5 stuff operates with 1 million devices per square kilometer. And so it only operates when those 1 million devices are there paying the money for it. So the actual, if you look at G5 and the cost of G5 and the power of G5, you have to have an economic engine at the end of the day which extracts that money. And that G5 square kilometer is worthwhile. And it does. So once you build that kilometer, that's your G5 investment is over. You sit there, take the money out of it. But there's going to be a whole lot of other square kilometers where this doesn't make sense. So G5 and Internet of Things make a certain amount of sense in certain scenarios. But one scenario, of course, is the classroom, in which you've got basic equipment and you want to cut the overhead time. The classroom is one example where the Internet of Things makes a lot of sense. And not because, you know, people will say, oh, look, I want to have an Internet of Things curtain closer. That's sort of nice and stuff. Or I want an Internet of Things that's okay, but if you want something which anyone can interact with, and it can reconfigure for different class and learning situations and keep up, that is a legitimate orientation for the Internet of Things. And there's a suite of devices which allow people to move from a passive to an active role, from an active to an exploratory role. So you want active and exploratory, and you can do it there. So that's why that strategic thing is important, and how do you communicate? That's a big challenge, and the skills to come up. I'm going up the slope again. For this is the killer slope. Now, my heart condition has definitely improved coming up this, but I will still be gasping for air coming up the top of this. So there's that project. And so these projects sort of sit there, and they require skills, or they do drag and organise within it. They have concrete things that you can communicate with, and they pose the strategic question which will open the door to moving forward, getting the strategic advantage. Now, so if you've got sort of your carrier group hemming you in, cut the supply line or create another strategic move, the strategic purpose of, you know, why do you have this group blocking you, mightn't make as much sense there. Now, the question would be, so at the start, it's a worthy idea to make a quantum oscillator, but in all likelihood you can't do it, therefore I don't have to worry about it. Okay, it's all very good to make a quantum oscillator, and you have built one and it's successful. Let me come back to you to think why it's not there. It sort of allows it to move forward. And, of course, I'm speaking to an international audience. So if these things get up, I should be able to move the concept, technology, to a region where it can be exploited. So this is sort of using the communication skill thing to actually lift ideas out of a region so it can go ahead. Now bear in mind, there's sort of an altitude problem here in terms of that I have certain skill sets at very high altitude, and there's questions about whether I can get sort of really basic things, class control, understanding of all the students in a unknown conditions. That is, that a student may be upset, may not communicate back to a carrier groups, and I have to spend my time sort of dealing with that. It's an unknown. And so, I'm not going to get time to practice that or support in that, but if I do these projects, I might get up to a point where I can start to practice that in a different environment and slowly close down the possible possible areas that they can launch torpedoes at. If that sort of sense, my carrier's going into a Arx coral reef, so the torpedoes can't get to me, but I've got to get there slowly. Coming up across. Oh Christ, sorry. I'm just realizing how much further I have to go. It just goes up and up. I've got to try and do it. So even though I have noticed my head where I was going to start talking, so this is obviously going across. I don't know whether it is coherent. Then there's the other idea of turning the entire surface of the Earth into a classroom of the galaxy. That is, shrink the galaxy by a trillion times, that's a million times. The Sun becomes the size of a drawing pin head, and you plant that in Glenbrook, and then the nearest sun is 40 kilometres away at that scale. And then automatically, once you do that, the rest of the surface of the Earth becomes home for these stars. Now, idea for that is to actually in terms of skills, try and pick out where the communication problems were. And so, where there's maths, I introduce toy play fund. So I can do that. Where there's a list and a chart, make it into a distance at a distance sign. Hello. Oh God. Oh. It's interesting. I just listen to the tinnitus in my ears increase. I don't know why that's so it's sort of going down. So that's a technology to go across, and so that's purely skills, communication, and practice sort of communication discipline. That is focused, limited, responsive, and it's not doing too good so far. I've got, and obviously timely. That is, it's taken months to get up across and to go forward with all the back steps covered. And it is interesting to see this. It hasn't gone forward, even though it's a good idea. So you've got 3 or 4 things where it's gone forward, and you can see the place that has gone forward. Interest in communication is fundamentally goodwill, and so I have to actually, in developing my communication skills, find regions of goodwill and then practice that limitation coming forward. And so it's at a certain point, it's trying to work out how that moves to the next position. Now, so you've got all those three projects, and there's multiple other projects who are a long way further back. One is the teaching of historic battlefields in schools by having drones fly out and build the battlefield. And then they fly back, and then you walk over the battlefield and explain what's going on. So you've got the distances and the scale, and the problems are much more alive there. Now, trying to work out how to communicate that and what the blocks are in terms of how you put it forward is a problem. It's I haven't actually quite got the actual story there, but having set it up as a project, I've looked at the communication, it's not working. So having these multiple things is coming across, and is this listening to what's going on now? I suppose what I'm trying to do here is in this podcast is communicate the broad overview on several levels. The broad overview you can see. Actually see and hear what we can hear. Health being worked. You can see here the a zone of constructive rehabilitation. That is obviously the exercise and the result, but also an environment which is contained, reflective, pulling you forward all the time, and with barriers. So obviously I have a barrier which I want to get to, which is the maximum improvement I can muster by 1 year, October, because that's the time you should have between cognitive tests. And again, it's like this carrier group or whatever it is, where you don't know where the enemy is, don't know what to do, but you have to do maneuvers on the hope that something works. So I myself don't know if my continual work on short-term memory, hours a day, is going to pay off. And so there's certain times where, so it's also understanding where the memory is missing. And like if you don't challenge yourself and don't look, you don't realize, oh, I have forgotten everything between those two dates, blank. Or did I say that? Or things like, look at something, who's done that? Who has done that? That's such a bad job. I like the craftsmanship. Who could, the fairies? No. It's you pushing on. So yeah, so you've seen the rehab structure. The fact that it will be available instantaneously, you'll see some of the structures of pushing it out, and that's sort of aligned with the skills and capabilities to push it, and some of the higher level strategies. The first strategy, obviously, is to maximize rehab, whatever it is, the input, and push on it. And there's a certain amount of luck or outside viewpoint which gives you sort of skill methodologies to move forward, that is to mix as much, and I'm sure I'm not mixing as much as possible, and in the social situations I think that will push me a bit further forward. I'm out of the climb, so you'll hear my breath slowly get back. I'll get back into home, so I'm on the flat up out of the gorge there. That must be hard for you guys to listen. So there's that strategy of rehab. I really don't know what it is. I'm often surprised. I'm surprised, say, my vision in my left eye suddenly improved. I no longer have, and there's certain things that are improving. I can say definitely that's improved. So let's hope it keeps on pushing. And there's the aggregation of those strategies to be internally consistent, to pull across, then those strategies, when they unfold, to shine a light on what to do, what that next step is. And so that next step is not, waiting for a bureaucrat to say, stamp, we forgive you, or we do this, lie, whatever it is. I will hopefully, that's a fallback, but be in a position to say, in this time, I've been working back, but I can see this is a definite reason to go for such reasons, because it will advance Australian education. So this, say the quantum oscillator, it's not whether it will, I have the intent. This is my physical representation of my intent. You may sit on the sidelines and disagree with how the classroom is run, but this speaker and this method is the intent. And if I have it distributed around the world, there may be one place in Crete which it works. So if people sort of block it out completely, it's because it's a physical thing and it's a global market, it can go across for the global classroom, a truly global classroom. The entire globe is a classroom. I can learn from its failure, and I can say, this, it may not be big, but this is a demonstration of my intent. So it's strategic intent. So, it blows me away listening to strategy meetings that people say, I'm going to pick a strategy out of the air, and they don't have the strategic intent, that is, who they think they are, what's going to happen, how it's going to play out, how people are going to think differently after the end of it. So a strategy as opposed to a tactic is how you get to a place, what you employ, their methods. A strategy is a higher level, what is your intent and how people are going to think differently from it. Now, I'm not that bright at the moment. I'm just vomiting it out where I've been trained in my MBA and possibly a little bit of officer, but mostly a bit of officer training, but mostly MBA. The idea of strategy. So when all that's gone, one of the things is in all those processes not to not to engage in a firefight, which I can't win. That is, I don't have the capacity, the essentially, you don't want to get in an arm wrestle where you said, I said, no, you should do this, I didn't do that, because the other person can just sit back out of range and just not do anything. You want to, so this is sort of that strategic arc, obviously, to move forward. So the idea of strategic arc is rehab now and in a time strategic. It's not dominance, strategic environment. There is a word for, I suppose, the environment, a strategic coherence. So from strategic coherence, you can go forward, and in the act of going forward, you can artfully wrap up your obstacles. So the obstacles are there in front of you, located, but if you fundamentally, at the end of the day, don't have a better way of teaching kids, there is no intrinsic motivation for, there's no motivation for someone to come out and actually help your butt. Again, there's no motivation if it's a complete bloodbath and a set of cats scratching each other. There's no point. You have to actually organize it. So the paperwork is done, the research is done, the actual sequence is there, such that, and there's no point, there's no one's going to intervene to save you. Or, I don't know, there's no track history of, oh, I better get this process right, because it's really important to get the process right. It's not there, but if it means people at the end of the day have voted, given taxes to achieve results, and if you have a result that is hinging on removing an obstacle, that obstacle can be removed. But until that happens, you're not going to get any stuff. It's sort of like the government's not going to turn around and say, oh, we've been very naughty here, I'm all very sorry. That I've never seen that happen. It's unfortunately, this is capitalism, where people are bad, it's people suffering, plenty, but at the moment we keep on turning the spotlight on to success stories and sucking capital out of things. So essentially, if a string of shops have bad service, and have speak back to customers and, you know, own the space, going to the complaints department's not going to move them. Suing them is not going to move them. They'll just think they're not going to move. It's when you set up competition, a bright, shiny competition, that's going to win. And but when it wins, you have to have your homework to do it, and you just have to, I suppose, make them aware that as they're launching torpedoes, that you are in some coral, and that the launching of the torpedo is giving away so much information, like who launched it, what's the chain of command behind it, who's the manufacturer of it, yeah, and what are you trying to do? But you're not going to get any result from that. In an ideal world, you would think a responsible person would step up. But if you've got indeed an expansive pirate colony, it's a bit like I have a view of Doctor Who lands on a pirate island, and everyone's searching for treasure. Of course, the treasure is government taxpayers' money. There's no thought of using the treasure to actually build a city or do anything big. And while it's happening, there's a sort of another culture, sort of the Doctor Who culture, who, with sonic screwdrivers, picks up some ordinary looking stuff and starts producing a time machine. And really, the quantum oscillator is a time machine. It basically goes back to a critical point in history where Einstein made a point and missed the turn off to quantum mechanics, and brings Einstein into the room back and gets him explaining to the kids, this is the way we go. And that moves across. So that's that sort of the pirate colony versus Doctor Who. Now, similar truth, this is an ordinary beaker. They're little chips. Don't look much. They look like little bits of plastic. And there's not many wires. It's not, they're hooked up a bit like protein. And this is the way we've always done it. We teach this over many years, step by step, because it's not unautomated, and we automate it in the kids' minds. Well, again, it's not a time machine. It's a future time machine. It's operating at a dimension, sort of like the pirate colony is very much the physical dimensions, whereas the actual rehab bubble is a bit like the TARDIS in terms of, I'm just stringing this along because I may have to stop doing this, or I might, you know what I'll do is I'll see if I can do a periodic table recall as a hit here. So that's a general idea to go across. Now, to be honest, I didn't have any of that thought and plan. I've got the overall plan, I know what I'm doing, but I haven't articulated it, and trying to recall it and going past, there's certain things that as I'm speaking to you, there's certain things that I know that I have forgotten. Like I know I've forgotten the name of the software packages which handle MP3 and MP4. FFPEG, I think something like that. I really can't remember. Go across. Okay. So on this, I'm going to, going back home, recite the periodic table. And this is sort of like deep memory. Hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, neon, sodium, magnesium, aluminium, silicon, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, argon, potassium, calcium, scandium, titanium, vanadium, chromium, manganese, iron, cobalt, nickel, copper, zinc, gallium, germanium, arsenic, selenium, bromine, krypton, strontium, rubidium, yttrium, zirconium, niobium, molybdenum, technetium, ruthenium, rhodium, palladium, silver, cadmium, indium, tin, antimony, tellurium, iodine, xenon, cesium, barium, lanthanum, cerium, praseodymium, neodymium, promethium, samarium, europium, goldium, terbium, dysprosium, holmium, erbium, thulmium, yttrium. Lutetium, hafnium, tantalum, tungsten, rhenium, osmium, iridium, platinum, gold, mercury, thallium, lead, bismuth, plutonium, astatine, radon, francium, radium, actinium, thorium, pyroctinium, uranium, neptunium, plutonium, americium, curium, Berkeley, californium, einsteinium, fernium, mendelevium, nobelium, rutherfordium, lawrencium, rutherfordium, dubnium, seaborgium, borium, metrium, hasnium, metrium, Dravstratium, rotgerdium, Copernican. I'm not sure on this one. Nipponium, fluvium, moscovium, livermorium, tennesseum, monogansum. That's probably the quickest periodic table I've ever said coming up. And I think I'll just call it a night there. So I have to go across. Thanks a lot for listening. An hour and 47 minutes, blood eye.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.